Kara Spencer began her political career in 2015 by knocking off an incumbent. Now, she hopes to do the same in her second run for mayor with a focus on addressing basic city services. The 8th Ward Alderwoman joins me next on the latest episode of Politically Speaking to talk about her path to the mayor's office. Let's hit the music.
This is Politically Speaking, the definitive show about politics in the St. Louis region.
I thought this was an opportunity to have a new voice in that seat.
And the decisions I make in county government allows me to help people in large groups, and I enjoy it.
We're not using it as a wedge issue. We're using it more as a, you know, what's right for the region conversation.
We need to know what the issues are in our communities in order to address them.
Because people want to see change, and they want to see a St. Louis that works for everyone.
Some days I need the credit, most days I don't. But most importantly, I have to be able to control how this environment is going to evolve.
We knew that in races that have multiple candidates, the only way you win is in the streets.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Rachel Lippman. Joining me today on the podcast is
Alderwoman Kara Spencer.
She is a candidate for mayor of St. Louis. We have also recorded interviews and already published with Mayor Tashara Jones. And you'll also find podcasts with Andrew Jones and Michael Butler as well. And Kara, this is now your third time on the podcast. You are a fairly new Alderwoman and then a candidate for mayor in 2021. But for those who may be new listeners or aren't as rabid consumers, remind us of, you know, who you are. Give us a quick biography.
Sure. Well, I'm a lifelong St. Louisan. I was born down in South St. Louis. I actually grew up a large part in unincorporated St. Louis County. I am the first in my family to go to college. I went to Truman State University, where I studied mathematics on a scholarship and a Pell Grant. And when I came back from school, I got a job in my chosen field doing mathematical modeling for large companies and decided to run for office for the first time in 2015. Whole host of reasons, one of which, I'd bought a house in a neighborhood that thought was up and coming and really had a lot of challenges. And so I decided to get involved in driving the solutions. And when I ran for office then, there was an incumbent who had been in office and was successful in taking that seat and really helping to drive some of the renaissance that you see on Cherokee Street and the neighborhoods around that.
So how does math connect to politics? Because those two things seem to be absolute polar opposites of each other.
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've never taken a political science class in my life, not in high school, not in college. And it really wasn't on my radar, so to speak. But, having the background in mathematics and logistics has been enormously helpful to me in governance and government in general, really being able to parse through some of the financial packages that we consider, understanding the budget, getting into the nitty gritty. You know, at the end of the day, we need our city government to make sure that we're taking in tax dollars and returning a benefit to our citizens. And so having that background of really analyzing returns to investors, whether they are your voters or your business community, has been incredibly important and valuable to me as a public servant.
You went from representing as the 20th Ward Alderwoman, kind of Gravois Park, Cherokee Street, that was your base, to now as 8th Ward Alderwoman, you stretch all the way up into downtown. And I don't remember how far south you go, but it's an expansive territory. What did you learn as you started representing a larger area of the city?
Sure. Well, yeah, my new district is very different from the first district I was elected to represent. My district now goes from Laclede's Landing, just north of the Arch, carries down a lot of downtown, and goes all the way to Bellevue Boulevard, just by coincidence, the street I happen to have been born on, which is right along Bellevue Park.
And for those who may not be as familiar with the twists and turns of South St. Louis, Bellevue Park is, what's the next kind of big landmark that people think of when they think of Bellevue Park?
Well, it's right along the bend of the Mississippi River.
Okay.
So you have the Bluffs down there. Bellevue
Bluffs
Park.
On Broadway, roughly, kind of area?
That's right. So okay. Just south of there. It's right where, the Bluffs kind of come down, geographically speaking. My district now includes 13 neighborhoods, a wide range of constituencies. And it's been not only a challenge, it's been a lot of fun to really dig into some of the issues facing our downtown. You may remember one of the first things I did as the alderman of downtown is usher through a bill that authorized the eminent domain of the city's largest building, the Railway Exchange, bringing the Millennium Hotel owners to the table. Once we issued an authorized eminent domain for the Railway Exchange, I threatened the exact same course of action with the Millennium Hotel. It was very successful bringing the owners to the table, getting it on the market, and now it's been sold, and we're looking at a redevelopment strategies for that enormously important piece of property right there on the arch.
You announced your second run for mayor back in May. Is there anything that has fundamentally changed since then, either for better or for worse?
Oh, I mean, you know, I see the new population statistics coming out. Every single year I watch those like a hawk because, you know, at the end of the day, I think about, you know, what is the purpose of city government? And to me, it's to make the city a place people want to be. It's that simple. You know, we've had some really big strides in that. You know, our foreign-born population is growing tremendously in the greater St. Louis area. In fact, I think we're number one in the nation for growth in that segment of the population, which is a tremendous, tremendous asset for our community. I think that's a big win for all of us. But the population loss that we are seeing in the city absolutely dwarfs that. What I keep hearing from people as to why they're leaving or why they're frustrated, city services is at the top of the list. You know, potholes, trash, obviously. But the fundamental failure to focus on those basics was laid absolutely bare in this last snowstorm. And you can see the, you know, in my opinion, in my observations, disregard for the importance of doing just the basic city services.
As a homeowner and a resident of the city of St. Louis, is there one thing that you've seen either since you announced for mayor or just kind of in general where you're like, this is the example of how city services fall the most short?
My son wanted me to buy him something last week over the weekend and came to me with a proposal of cleaning out the refrigerator and the freezer, which we had, you know, we had food in there from COVID, I hate to say, but he earned his what he wanted me to buy him by cleaning it top to bottom, and ended up having to throw away some food that, you know, had frankly, you know, been long past its expiration.
It gets pushed to the back,
and
of the,
you know, brings it out to the alley, and of course our dumpsters are overflowing. So, you know, we bring it back inside, doing our part by keeping our garbage, frankly, inside our house, and this is just unacceptable. And, you know, the failure to have any sense of urgency on these issues that make our city livable, I think is very, very clear to anyone and everyone.
Basic city services are one of the key areas that you list to focus in your platform. You also have transparency, jail oversight, public safety. And I'm wondering what the policies you have advanced as alderwoman that show your commitment to these areas.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, public safety. Let's talk about that. Several things, even just in the last couple of years. I mean, going back, you know, last summer, passing the first meaningful legislation reining in the open carrying of firearms has been widely successful. You no longer see the rampant, open carrying of semi-automatic weapons downtown that we were seeing for the years leading up to that. And the chief has even, you know, touted that as having reduced violence in our youth population by about 15%. But, you know, holding accountable landlords and bringing public safety, thinking outside the box in that way. Last year was able to make sure that we got Gabe Gore, our new circuit attorney, some additional staff, some raises within his department. There's a whole host of ways that you can improve public safety, and I think my track record really, really shows my commitment to doing those things.
Say more about that landlord accountability piece.
Sure. Yeah. You know, we're still dealing with Paul McKee, for example, and I am proud that I think it's been 8 years now, but being the first elected official to come out and say enough's enough. It's been some time. I'm sure many of your listeners don't remember this, but back in, I think, 2017, I removed the exemption for building code violations that Mr. McKee enjoyed as a way of not having to pay building code fines. lines. And that was the first step, really, in holding accountable one of the largest landholders in our community. But even on the granular level, on the local level, increasing fees and fines for having to board up vacant buildings within the confines of the state, or excuse me, of our charter.
What does your ability to get this legislation through the board say about how you'll tackle the job of mayor?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I'll talk about the gun bill in particular because, you know, I introduced that, you know, right after we got the new board. Many members of our new board of aldermen were closely aligned with the mayor. And of course, I ran against her. And so there was a huge disconnect, I would say, between me and many of my colleagues, the new colleagues down at the board, and some existing colleagues as well. And so when I introduced what I thought was really common sense gun legislation, I really encountered a lot of resistance. And it really gave me the opportunity to really take a step back and recognize how important it is to build relationships and spend the time doing that. And I'm really, really proud that by the end of the summer, we were able to pass that through the Board of Aldermen. It passed unanimously. But more importantly, I think I was able, you know, to not only spend that time building those relationships, but hearing the concerns of people with whom I disagree with on some issues and working through them. I mean, I think that's a critical component to governing, and it's a critical component to building the coalitions that we need, not only to get legislation through the Board of Aldermen and get things done in the city, but to think regionally and work constructively with a state that frankly disagrees with us on almost anything. And in order for us to succeed as a city, as a community, as a region, we are going to have to partner with our state and our federal governments that, let's face it, we don't vote in line with. And so being able to bridge some of those differences, I think, is the key to moving our community forward.
What is the day one change that you would make if you get into room 200?
Well, in addition to, you know, that focus on city services, reinstituting transparency and trust. You know, I talk a lot about, you know, why people are leaving the basic services and the public safety, but I think even more difficult to quantify and even more difficult, I think, to solve, to fix than some of those other really pressing issues is our citizens have lost faith in government, in the system. Crime statistics that people aren't buying, you know, the corruption or the perceived, the corruption coming out of the building division, the, you know, perceived corruption coming out of SLDC. You know, we had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity with COVID funds, and people keep asking, rightfully so, what do we have for it? 4 years later, what do we have to show for that? The funds we saw allocated to North City businesses to get through COVID largely not only haven't been awarded, but those lists of awardees included vacant lots, businesses that hadn't paid taxes, buildings, you know, businesses that didn't exist during COVID. The breakdown of fundamental trust is something that I'm going to be walking in the door day one to restore.
In response to the problems with the Northside grants, you chose to step down as a member of the SLDC board. Why was that the move that made sense to you, rather than remaining on the board to provide a level of oversight?
You know, because there was absolutely no path to oversight under the current structure. The SLDC organization, our St. Louis Development Corporation, the entity tasked and granted authority to drive economic development for our city, which, by the way, is not only critically important, it's an awesome, awesome role and responsibility in our community.
And are you meaning awesome as in like
huge? Okay. Huge, just okay. Greatly important. I mean, it is such an important role. And, you know, this mayor appointed a new director who oversees the function of the organization as CEO. There's also, as most corporations have, a board of directors, which is supposed to be your check and balance, really. And supposed to be overseeing the organization. And this mayor chose to appoint the head of the oversight organization, the board of directors, to be the head of the organization we're supposed to be overseeing. Okay.
So Neil Richardson was at one point the chair of the SLDC board, or was, or is still?
Is both.
Okay.
The CEO of the organization and the chair of the board of directors. And as a member of the board of directors, I was not given the information I needed to vote on issues and to really participate in constructive oversight of the organization. And so, you know, I'd show up to vote for issues without having adequate information. Information that I had, by the way, requested via email and written documentation, and felt like there was really, this was a sham of oversight. And there was really no way, in my opinion, in my experience, to participate in a meaningful way in overseeing an organization that was overseeing itself.
What is a program of the current administration that you would keep?
I'll have to give the mayor some credit here by, recently coming out with a proposal to increase salaries for our police department. I think having a high quality, high paid police staff is a move in the right direction. You know, I'm hopeful about the interim director for our jail. I think this is, very late in the game to be trying to make these changes. But I am supportive of moving things online and some other things. I'm grateful to see us moving towards a comprehensive 911 system. So I think there's some things in the works that are constructive and that I will consider keeping on board.
One of the biggest question marks for whoever becomes mayor is ongoing uncertainty about the earnings tax refunds. Mm. And this was a question you raised as chair of the budget committee in the budgeting process. And essentially the story is city set aside what they thought would be $26 million for paying out refunds that they inappropriately withheld. It ballooned to about $40 million. The first question is, did you ever get answers as to how the city got to the $26 million?
We had some guidance from our budget director, Paul Payne, on that. Obviously it was underestimated. I mean, from the collector of revenue was doing those estimates. It's my understanding and looking at those. So, I mean, I think that would be a question for the collector and one we need to dig into further, especially as we move through potential other lawsuits and issues on that front. Look, our earnings tax makes up a third of our city's budget, and it is
general revenue.
That's correct. Thank you, Rachel, because we do have several enterprise funds, the airport, the water department, and the parking division that take up a good chunk of the overall, the over $1 billion budget that the city has. But the general revenue, a third of it, does come from our earnings tax. And it's critically important that we safeguard it and that we understand we are moving forward. I mean, I have some concerns about what the long-term ramifications of that look like. I mean, certainly, we're going into a very, very tough set of years. You know, we're coming out of the COVID relief funds, and I know that we've been told that it hasn't shored up city services, but it absolutely has. And so, when that dries up, and when the reality of these earnings tax funds, not to mention the population loss, we have lost 20,000 taxpayers, okay, since 2020, this is going to have a very significant negative impact on our ability to deliver city services. So we've got to get smarter, more efficient, more effective. And, one of the big concerns I have going into, the Rams settlement funds and all these other potential expenditures is the idea of expanding what we do causes me great concern as we look at the reality of these budgetary constraints.
So what do you make, on that note, of the current proposal to use the money from the RAM settlement dollars?
Oh, gosh. Well, there's a couple proposals, and the proposals are changing on a daily basis at this time.
So as it stands right now, 11:45 a.m. on January 28th.
Again, there are several proposals, and they are changing behind the scenes on a minute-by-minute basis. So I couldn't even tell you exactly right now what's going on because it's probably shifted from conversations I had this morning. That being said, you know, look, fundamentally, we were awarded these funds because of the loss of the revenue that the Rams leaving St. Louis really presented our community. And importantly, those funds, the revenue source was downtown. And our downtown is really, really challenged right now. We are seeing businesses leave. The vacancy rate is very, very, very high. We have not seen the rental rates go up at all over the last 10 years. This is a very, very big problem for the economic viability of our region, of our city's heartbeat, you know, the sort of center of our community. And so I do think it's vitally important that we invest those funds in right where we got them, in our downtown. And before we consider expanding the services our city offers, you know, looking at issues like daycare, I mean, and speaking as a single working mom, I mean, it is, these are tough issues. Daycare is very expensive, but I just don't know that expanding city services at this time, when we're unable to adequately, you know, you scrape the ice off the streets. I just think we've really got to shore up what we do as a community, as a baseline, as a first priority.
So you did have a proposal that you were a co-sponsor mm-hmm. of. Is there anything that you would tweak in what was your original proposal now, which focused downtown, north side, southeast side of the city?
Yeah, I think there's some good components there. I want to see a home ownership model that provides paths to folks not only rehabbing the houses in our communities, but living in them, owning them, building equity, and building family wealth. I think that's a real key component to, you know, having a long-term sustainable society, is having people that have a path to financial increasing what they have. I think that's really important. You know, certainly we're tweaking those things. I mean, you know, where those funds are administered from is an important question. Right now, under the current structure and leadership of SLDC, that's a hard no for me. However, safeguarding SLDC, for example, and restructuring it, I think could be a viable and maybe a more flexible path for distributing some of these funds. So I think, you know, as we're kind of going through this, you're asking questions that I think we should all be asking ourselves. They're very, very important, and they're very tough to answer as we move to possibly a new administration very, very soon.
There's a bill that is up for a conversation. I don't think it passes, but there's a bill up for a conversation from Alderwoman Daniela Velazquez to create a city administrator position that would basically take the administrative role of the mayor out of the office of the mayor. Should the mayor stay the administrative head of the city, or should that be handed to someone else?
Yeah, this is a very, very important question. And I'm really grateful that the Alderwoman Velazquez is bringing this forward. This really came out of the Charter Commission conversations. That's where this concept originated. And the idea of a city manager is one that I really support, professionalizing the administering of city services. How you do that, whether you go with a city administrator, the approval process, for example, does the mayor appoint them? Does it go through the board of alderpersons? There's a whole host of governance questions that need to be answered. We are unique in our structure in many ways, one of which is having the board of ENA, having the board of alderpersons, et cetera. Being a county and having those county offices. So I'm reticent to pass something now, but I am committed to this conversation and hopefully eventual outcome of better professionalizing city government.
And does that apply even if the next time we're talking, you are Mayor Kara Spencer?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm hopeful that we can have this, this is the start of a longer conversation that we can have while I'm in that office and helping to figure out the nitty gritty, the nuts and bolts of which departments and how we restructure things internally. I think there's a whole host of things we should be considering at the same time. For example, does trash remain under streets? Does NIS, neighborhood stabilization, remain in public safety? Where do these pieces and ultimately land in the overall structure of city government? And I think as we move through hopefully a new administration, that's an enormous opportunity to be rethinking how we do some of these things.
And we'll be right back after this quick break. And we're back on Politically Speaking with 8th Ward Alderwoman and mayoral candidate Kara Spencer, and we'll talk some of the politics of this race now. Back in 2021, you endorsed the current mayor as a second choice for your supporters. You might surprise me by saying that you're going to do it this time, although I highly doubt it. Why not? Where has been the key break between, you know, this is someone that I could support if you don't support me, to no, absolutely not?
Well, you know, the options, I mean, at the time, and with all due respect to Mr. Andrew Jones, he's on a different political side of things than I am. And then we had a president of the board, Lewis Reed, and we've seen what has transpired since then. So my radar was out on that. But, you know, I think our stated values with the current mayor and myself are very similar. We have some overlapping in our stated set of values. But, you know, what I have seen, and I think many members of the community have seen since that, is that, look, we haven't seen the transparency. We haven't seen the good governance. You know, we've closed down one of our city jails, and the result has been the CJC, the failures there, the number of deaths that we have seen under this administration has been jaw-dropping, a failure to address homelessness, the response being to put a fence around City Hall is absolutely reprehensible. And, you know, I think that, you know, to see a stated set of values versus an enacted set of policies and procedures and service to the community has played out very differently than I think we all anticipated. And therein lies a big difference between the two of us.
You are currently winning the monetary race by a pretty good margin. As you look at the donations that are coming in, is there one or a trend of them that you are particularly proud of?
Well, yes, I would say the small dollar everyday donors. You know, I get little handwritten notes from residents who have seen me on the news, appreciate my perspective on X, Y, or Z. And that's incredibly gratifying. I mean, getting notes from my former high school principal and classmates.
All right, where'd you go to high school, Kara?
I went to Parkway South. That's where I graduated.
Patriot?
I was a Patriot.
Okay.
That's right. Shout out to Mr. Mazzola, have sent me a very nice note last week. But, you know, it's been extremely gratifying to see old friends from childhood, et cetera, old elementary school teachers, you know, just speaking about my character as a human being. And it's been extremely gratifying, Rachel.
What's your strategy to make outreach on the North Side wards? You had pretty sizable gaps in both primary and general election in 2021. What's the strategy to kind of close those gaps, maybe not win, but pick up some votes there?
Oh, sure. I mean, well, first of all, being present. So we're knocking doors throughout the city, and we're welcoming opportunities. We're hosting quite a few meet and greets in people's homes. They're welcoming us to have conversations with their neighbors and friends about issues facing our communities. And not surprisingly, you know, the issues are the same across the board. You know, the potholes, the trash, you know, deep, deep, deep disappointment in the failures of city government on those issues. But, you know, when we're looking at North St. Louis and talking to business owners who, you know, expected and were hopeful about the ARPA fund investments in their communities and seeing that play out has been really, really heartbreaking, to be honest with you. But, you know, my main strategy is not just about building a base of voters to elect me, but it's really about building the relationships that I'm going to need to really govern effectively and to effectively and better serve our Northside community. I mean, when I talk about population loss, Rachel, the vast majority of people leaving St. Louis are leaving our North City. And that is such a heartbreaking and relevant piece of this puzzle. You know, our failures over the last
4 or 5 years to serve that segment of our city need to be rectified.
Turnout in March 2021 was barely 22%. How do you generate excitement around an election when people are just kind of fed up with politics, not just local, but at a global level in general?
Oh, I mean, well, being excited about our city is one way that I'm doing that. Being present, ready and willing to come to any and every meeting. I think folks are excited about change, and I'm excited about change. So, you know, we saw, in the last cycle, we were in the throes of COVID, and so it was really hard to be present. But this round, we are literally anywhere and everywhere. So I think our enthusiasm, our energy is energizing the community. You're seeing us every weekend, me and a crew of people knocking doors and going to churches and going out to restaurants and being present in communities. I think it's energizing a voter base.
Aside from the prospect of change, what does excite you about the city of St. Louis?
Oh, well, the city just itself, our history, our amenities, the potential we have with geospatial and all of the work going on around that. I am incredibly bullish on the logistical side of St. Louis, where we're located, our universities. There's just such an upward potential here. And one of the things, in addition to energizing voters, I'm seeing people across a wide spectrum of political affiliations getting engaged in this election cycle, seeing that St. Louis is at a turning point. Many people are seeing this as kind of a low point for our city and looking for change and feeling very hopeful that working together across city and county, across political affiliations, that we can start to find overlapping goals and a path to working together.
Politically Speaking is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a service of the University of Missouri St. Louis. Alderwoman Kara Spencer, thanks for taking some time to talk about your campaign for mayor today.
Thank you for having me. I always love listening to the show, and it's always a pleasure to be on it.
Until next time, so long.
Thanks.